The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Are you ready, Steve?
Uh-huh.
Andy?
Yeah!
Bert? Well, all right, fellas. Let's go!
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader, want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern, for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length where we discuss all things E-Mini along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. Today's Tuesday, 14th day of August, 2012. Quick look at the numbers. Dow up 42 points. S&P up 5. Comp up 8.5. Gold down 7. Crude up 52 cents a barrel. And you may have heard yesterday, Helen Gurley Brown passed away yesterday at the age of 90. Now, she was a very iconic figure. As a kid growing up, she was what would be referred to as a scandalous figure. She was the editor of Cosmopolitan magazine. She wrote the book, in 1962, I believe it was. I'm reaching way back because I was born in 59, so I don't actually remember it on the newsstands, but I think it was in 62 she wrote a book called Sex and the Single Girl, which I grew up in the Deep South. That was a very taboo thing. Women didn't write books like that. Now, where she was in New York City, it was Manhattan a little more. She was a university woman, went to Columbia, etc. Yeah, a little more accepted, but, early 60s, there was a lot of turmoil going on in this country, and here was this Helen Gurley Brown. She really sort of led the feminist movement, and her autobiography, or her her memoir, which was published in 2010, was entitled Bad Girls Go Everywhere. She was born in Arkansas, grew up in a working-class family that encountered uniquely harsh struggles even for the Depression era. Her father died in an elevator accident when she was still young, and her mother and sister both contracted polio following a move to Los Angeles. Now, some of you may be familiar with the television program Mad Men. It's about the advertising business in the 60s. It is said that the young lady there, the one female copywriter on the show, Peggy Olson, that her part and her job is patterned after Helen Gurley Brown, because that was her original job before she went on to be the very famous and iconic individual that she became. Everybody's still wondering about night software, night trading. Now, the word now is night software because people are still wondering what really happened. This was a $440 million blow-up. Now, there's still not a public statement, but people close to the situation say that the trading loss stemmed from an old set of computer software that was inadvertently reactivated when a new program was installed. Once triggered on August 1st, the dormant system started multiplying stock trades by 1,000. Knight, based in Jersey City, New Jersey, hasn't explained in any detail what caused the trading losses, but it did lead to a $400 million rescue that left most of the company in the hands of investors led by Jefferies Group, which trades under the symbol JEF. The 45-minute, this is where it gets kind of odd, the 45-minute delay in shutting down the malfunction has confused some securities professionals who say that trading programs can typically be disabled instantly. In other words, when the machine goes haywire, you just turn it off. But Chief Executive Officer Thomas Joyce, 57, in an August 2nd interview with Bloomberg Television, said the software problem was an infrastructure problem. It was more of a networking problem as opposed to the quantitative tools that were being used to trade. The company, they're actually responsible for about 10% of U.S. share volume. They're going to hire an outside advisor to investigate what led to the losses. But the bottom line is their computers bombarded the market with unintended orders after trading began on August 1st, causing volume to surge and prices to swing in dozens of securities. The NYSE Euronext canceled trades that were 30% or more away from the price at the start of trading, a decision that applied to only six securities out of 140 that were reviewed. Now, the company was updating software in preparation for a New York Stock Exchange plan aimed at luring more individual investors to the exchange. Joyce said in the August 2nd interview, without giving any further details, the big board's so-called retail liquidity program, designed to attract smaller investors by giving them superior prices, was being implemented that very day. Does that sound familiar? Kind of like the NASDAQ blowing up on the day that Facebook IPOs. So, that's the story, and they're sticking to it for now. We'll probably hear more as time passes. You know, this thing with Ryan being the vice president pick of Mr. Romney, not getting the greatest press from either side of the aisle. I mean, it's a win, it's a loss, it's a win. But ready or not, a television commercial depicting Granny being pushed out of her wheelchair and over a cliff by someone resembling the new vice presidential candidate will soon be coming to a TV near you. While Nana and Gramps are likely in no immediate danger of meeting their end at the hands of the Republican plan to modify Medicare, there's going to be a buzzsaw of criticism over the controversial proposals. The question is, will the criticism be justified or just one more attempt to paint a candidate with a highly partisan paintbrush? Now, I came into the show yesterday with very little understanding of how his plan works. I have only a slightly better understanding today. Here's what I'm reading. I'm not making this up. Whoever wrote it may have made it up, but premium support replaces the current system of having government pay healthcare providers for the services, procedures, hospitalizations, etc., administered to Medicare beneficiaries with direct cash payments to those same seniors and other Medicare beneficiaries. So in other words, instead of getting services, they get cash, which they would then use to buy coverage from private health insurance companies. If properly utilized, the premium support payments should provide the identical quality of care as is now available through the Medicare program. The theory, which supports the use of premiums, suggests that by moving coverage for the 65-plus crowd to the private markets, in other words, those are the individuals who actually qualify for Medicare or those who are 65 and older, is that the competition that would result would not only result in substantially lower cost to government, as there would be established caps on what seniors would be given to spend versus the current system where healthcare costs are largely determined by the providers and Medicare is left to pay the constantly rising bills. And I think that's the fly in the ointment right there. But would also provide better coverage for our seniors who would benefit from insurance companies creating better products in an effort to acquire the elderly's business. Additionally, with there being a more finite amount of money available to seniors to pay for their care, the trajectory of medical cost could be held down as the elderly won't have much extra money to pay for more than what they can purchase with their subsidies. If you care to study this enough, the underpinnings of this concept comes out of the Heritage Foundation, in part. Not the Heritage Foundation, but the other side of the aisle. I forget the name of their group. So while this all sounds very Republican and very right side of the aisle, there's definitely some Democratic ideology in it. So, you know, is it good for if you're 65 or older, the fact that you will be capped at some point, that's going to be an issue. And we know right now that we live in a nation where if you go to a hospital and if you have no money and no insurance, they cannot refuse you care. So in a life-threatening situation, no one will go without care, as is the case in some countries. If you go into a hospital in Kenya or Kampala, and in your left hand you're carrying your right arm, and you obviously are in need of emergency surgery and help, the first question is not, do you have insurance, because hardly anyone does. There's certainly no government insurance. The question is, do you have any money? And if the answer is no, then they will politely ask you to go bleed outside. That's just the way that goes. So, we'll have to see how this plays out. Will insurance companies bend? Will they? I mean, the care has to be paid for somehow. But we also know how horribly the Medicare system has been abused. We've seen the 60 Minutes specials and the NBC Investigates where these guys open shops and they bill people for wheelchairs and all kinds of devices, or they bill Medicare on behalf of Medicare recipients. And the Medicare recipients themselves don't even know this is going on. There was a real hotbed of this activity in Florida. They went around on some of these documentaries and just showed all of these businesses. They were kind of shuttered up, but yet they, on the books, they appeared to be a open and thriving business. But the only thing open and thriving was the person somewhere sitting at a computer filling out the forms, sending them into Medicare to get compensated for all of the medical supplies and equipment and services even that were being provided to these recipients. Now, you ask, how did they get the names and Social Security numbers and Medicare account numbers of these people to perpetrate the scam? And now, this wasn't some small scam. This was huge. This was wholesale. Apparently, the names and numbers were readily available for sale on the black market. So, literally, all you had to do was buy a list of names, go get a certification yourself from Medicare to be a provider, which apparently was a very easy thing to do, and you were in business. All you had to do was fill out forms, send them in, and that government check would show up on a regular basis. This will stop that, because it will be privatized. It will be in the hands of insurance companies who have to turn and, you know, face their shareholders and, you know, the whole profit loss scenario thing. Yeah. So there will be some accountability for sure. How it's going to play out at the polls, I don't know. It's starting to look like maybe Romney could have made a better pick. Maybe not for the country, his long-term economic health, but for his chance of getting elected, he perhaps could have made a better choice. What's really important? Well, obviously, the long-term economic health of the country is what's most important, but it's meaningless if he can't get elected. Good afternoon, Michael.
Good afternoon, Dwayne.
Not a lot to recap today, but by all means, go right ahead.
All right, I will grab everything.
Take it away.
And do the recap. Excuse me.
I'll just point out right here as you're taking the charts from those that were in the live trading room. See this right here, guys? I was talking to you about this. We were running up into this red MA1 right here, right at the zone. And the potential for that to be pretty good resistance has turned out to be PGR. Pretty good resistance. Okay, it's all yours.
All right. Let's see. Let me grab the charts to start with. Hey, Mike Reed's in the house. There you go. Everyone should be looking at my charts at the moment.
Got them.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Today is Tuesday, August 14th, 2012. Going to go over the trades that set up in the live trading room, the trades we took, and the trades we didn't take. We'll cover it all. We actually only took two trades this morning. We took one NQ trade that lost, so we're down 9 ticks on the NQ, and one ES trade that eventually lost, so we're down 8 ticks on the ES. Not a lot of activity. But let's start out with the ES, okay? Before we go any further, if you want to take a free trial with us, go to www.cfrn.net/apply. Fill out the little form there. All we ask for is your name and your email address. We don't ask for any credit card information or anything like that. In the free trial, you get 5 days in the live trading room, 2 hours per day. You get access to all the indicators. You get access to Dwayne and myself, and you get access to all the data feeds and charts that you see here, and then a whole lot more. All right. Our first trade of the day actually happened right here. I was not able to catch this trade. It was a short trade. Pulled back up to the BBC right here inside the weekly trading zone. By the time I realized it had happened, it had already moved down to about right here. I did have another opportunity to get into it after the fact, but I wanted it had already gone down and closed the window of opportunity, which is the area between the BBC and the MA1. I decided to just let it go and take the next trade. Now, the next trade, I didn't do this right at the right on the news event. I let that go and didn't take that trade. But I did take this trade over here, okay? Once we had put in a lower low, a lower swing right here, I shorted a pull back up to the BBC right here. And you can see that that stopped me out to the tick, came back down. It gave me an opportunity to get out of break even right here, but then it went all the way up there and stopped me out. the market has gone sideways since then. We don't have a ton of volume in the market today. As a matter of fact, yesterday was the lowest volume day on the New York Stock Exchange all year, I believe. So we did not have a ton of volume yesterday or today. And that was it. That was the ES this morning. Not a lot of opportunity. You know, we have these weekly trading zones right around us. After last week's narrow range for the majority of the week, we had said on Friday that the zones this week are likely to be a little tight, and it's going to make trading, it's going to make valid trade setups less frequent this week. All right. That was the ES. Now, let's jump over here to the NQ. All right. We took one trade on the NQ, and it was a losing trade right here. It went in our favor a little bit, went down to the MA1. The MA1 held it, rejected it, pushed it back, and then price eventually went back down in the proper direction there. You can see in here that all these other ones were trades that had set up. What we look for is a cross of the MA1, which is the red and blue line right here, above the BBC, which is the green line right here. You look for that cross up, a test of the BBC with an up close right there. That up close was a spot to get long and then take the long trade on the way up. There was an opportunity over here to take the short trade. I had missed that. And another opportunity here to take a long trade that I had missed. Now, as we're wrapping up the morning session, we really didn't have anything right in here as we're wrapping up the morning session. While Dwayne was talking, there was an opportunity right in here to take a short trade. All right. Now, it's really pretty straightforward. All you do is you look for the MA1 to cross over the BBC, come back down, test it, give an up close, and there it goes. All right? That's all you're really looking at. Okay? That was the NQ. All right? This was the one that we lost, and we missed all these other ones. So there were 5 winning trades, 1 losing trade, and I got the 1 losing trade. let's jump over here to the YM. Now, the YM was really, really choppy all morning. We weren't terribly interested in any trades here on the YM. The only thing that even looked remotely decent was this one right here where it came back down to test the BBC. But you see we had a double top in place over here, so we weren't that interested in that trade either. You know, there was just nothing to do over there on the YM. The 6E had a zone right here this morning. You know, it didn't have a lot of opportunity either. There were a few spots in here. Even that's not exactly right. But right here we had a bearish cross pull back up, tested the BBC with a down close, and we had some bearish divergence down there. So you see we're using the same exact indicators and the same setup across the different markets here. All right. The beauty of this is that you only really need to learn one thing. And you can trade a few different markets with it, all right? You can trade whatever you want, really. We went over in the live trading room this morning. We went over gold, and the Russell 2000 for one of the folks that's in there on a trial. just to cover it quickly, all right, we did go over that in the live trading room this morning. I didn't take any crude trades. As a matter of fact, I didn't even look at crude oil this morning. That may have been the market that was moving around, but let's just jump over to it and take a look. All right, here is crude right now, and I'm looking at it for the first time with you right now. I don't know how these things get there. They just sort of stretch themselves out. all right, so on the crude, using the same exact setup, you know, you get your bullish cross right here, test of the BBC with an up close with bullish divergence right there. Okay. Right there was an opportunity. Over here was an opportunity, but the cycle was going down against it. So even though it won, I wouldn't have taken that trade. Over here was a short opportunity right in there. All right, I would have taken that trade. Just scrolling down. I wouldn't have taken anything right in here. This one right here at 10:30, right there. You see we had the bearish cross with the bearish divergence, tested the BBC with a down close. Right in here. Yeah, right in here. Okay, the bullish cross tested the BBC with an up close. Right in here, the MA1 was going, it was on the wrong side of the BBC to be taking short trades. We had the bearish divergence there, but the MA1 was on the wrong side of the BBC. over here, that's pretty much it, guys. We didn't get a ton of opportunity in there. All right, there was just not a ton of opportunity. That's it. Unfortunately, some days are really slow, and today was one of those days. So that was it. That's where we wrap it up on the morning session, guys. We didn't have a ton of opportunity, so we didn't take a ton of trades. If you guys have any questions, again, you can email us at support@cfrn.net. Again, that's support@cfrn.net. hang on a sec. Yep, that's it. I don't see any questions being typed in here, and I know Mike Reed's in the house, and David's going to be in the house, so I am going to wrap up the recording right here. If anybody has any questions about anything, email us, support@cfrn.net. All right. That is it.
All right, thanks, Mike. Mike Reed, TradeStalker.com. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
How are you?
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good, man.
Hey, Mike.
Been a while since
we've
heard from you. I say
it's been a while
since we heard from you. Okay. Still is, I guess.
Uh-oh.
It must be my microphone, but I'm having a hard time hearing Dwayne.
That would be your head.
Yeah, hi, guys.
How are you, man?
There you
that,
go.
The other you came over.
Can you hear me now?
Okay. Well, yep, my answer better now.
Fantastic. Well, good to have you with us, brother. What do you
Thanks,
think?
Thanks, Mike.
Quiet market. Inside a 16-point range now for how long? How many days?
Yeah. Six days?
Actually, we broke out of the top of that range by a little bit today.
Yeah. Yeah, 1403 was, there were two highs there, and that was, I thought that would be breakout area today. And then our next resistance that we were looking for was right at the high, 1407.75 to 1408.50, and that turned us down, and then since then we've been inside that range, the first hour's range, but turned away from that 1407 area three times now. So, I think we're getting a bit extended and they'd have to push over that and then be able to hold, which seems like it's going to take some work. Let's see. I think the important spot on the downside was around today's lows, which was close to yesterday's highs. And that's kind of like a transition area, but if that's broken, then down at 1399 to 98 areas, that should be like a line in the sand. I think it's turn out to be a kind of a fake out move up here. If they go down and take out that area, especially they have it kind of reversible today, which there's been a good bid on all these dips on the way up. So that's, I'd like to see a break of some sort for, starting aggressive, because maybe you don't know if it's just a decent pullback or a really trend, but selling against that high is not a bad idea with a stop still above there.
Well, it's increased that range now with today's movement to 22.5 points. So we got a 22 point.
I think it's 5.75.
23.
Oh. I'm sorry. Yeah. 5.75 during today's session, which tiny.
So over the last seven trading days, 23 point range.
Yeah. I know. I keep 3 and 3, 10 3 day, 10 day, and 20 day average ranges, and they're all like way down there, and 10 tendency at lows is to see big volatility, high volatility, high implied volatility, and this tends to be the opposite at highs. But you need to see the indicator reverse, and today is actually the first time that it's turned up by this amount for quite a while. So, a bit of a sentiment shift at the highs.
What do you think long term? You think we're going to rally into the election?
Boy, tough question, Dwayne. I think that, I was looking for like a double top in August and then pull back August to October, but we'll have to see up here. What is it, 1417 or 1418 was the high? And was it March or April 2nd?
I think that's right, yeah.
Well, there's still a potential double top, and if they begin to break down, then I think we could start something like that, or at least chop sideways to lower into that time frame. But if we can blow through the highs, let's see, there's room to run up, just a room to run above there, a little bit of room to run. So I don't think all the way back to the all-time high, but at least into the 1430s maybe, but
we'll
have to see if we get that breakout.
The thing is, we're in a market right now, in a market, in a world going broke. The market's S&P 500 is up 30% over the last 10 months.
Yeah.
Against the worst imaginable economic backdrop, from Europe to, and even China is running out of money. Literally they're running out of money. They have, yes, all kinds of investments in the euro and in the dollar and in the yen and all of these other foreign currencies. But actual folding money that you put in your pocket and go to the local shop down the street and buy some oolong tea. They're literally out of cash. They're out of money, and they're trying to figure out how they're going to rectify the problem and what they're going to do about that. I mean, in small villages and provinces all across China, people don't have ready access to instant teller machines, and there's not a bank on every corner. So, anyway, with all that's going on around the globe, now that some people say that markets are predictive, that the market can tell you what's really going on no matter what appears to be going on. And if one subscribes to that theory, then the fact that the market is 30% higher over the last 10 months against everything I just said, then we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to imagine. I don't know. I think the West or whatever are scratching their heads. I think a lot of technical analysts are too. It's been the last, during the summer here, it's been, you look at a chart and it looks like it's been pretty active. But actually it's just kind of slow grinding moves in both directions now. Until we get some emotion into this market. There hasn't been any fear on the upside. All the dips get bought, and today is the first little sign of a shift in sentiment.
The low came back in June. On June 4th, we put in a low down at 1255.50. Mm-hmm. And from there, we rallied up to 1342. And we had a little pullback down to 1297, turned right around and ran to 1358, pulled back to 1302, and then ran up to 1375, pulled back to 1323, put in a double top there at that 1372 area, actually 76. And then created a double bottom right at that 1323 area. The actual number is 21. And so we had a little double top, double bottom there in July. So a little sideways action for the month of July. But then coming out of July into August, on July 19th, when we completed that double bottom, we then rallied for four straight days, which took us from 1323 all the way up to 1386. And then from 86, we pulled back over the next 4 days down to 51. And since then, we have that one big day that took us from a low of 1360 to a high of 9050. That was back on August 3rd. It's a 30-point day. And since then, we've had this ongoing string of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 days where the market just can't seem to get it in gear. But it's been a steady move higher, but you're right, every pullback gets bought.
Yeah. And there's like on the daily chart, if you look at the daily close only chart, you can see just a sawtooth upside pattern that, as long as that trend is held, I think, or until it's broken, the market will be all right. If that's taken out, then I think that could be one thing that's around, but it rejected the 1407 area, and then, I'm just not able to. I think they're running up. People are not wanting to get caught at the top up here. We are due some pullback. And I got to watch the 1399.90 area if they happen to take out today's lows. And especially if they were to close down there, we would have, I don't know, your candlestick pattern, we'd have kind of a Would it be a doji top or a shooting star or something? What does that look like, Dwayne?
On which chart now?
On a daily chart, daily day session chart.
Yeah, shooting star.
That's a call. Okay.
If it closed down anywhere in here, preferably lower. You know, if we got a little bit lower on the day, we'd want to see a red body. But then the wick needs to be twice the size of the body, or is it three times? I know it when I see it. We ran up the high this morning.
775.
Well, pre-market it went to 1409.5.
Yeah. Okay.
And we had a weekly trading zone up at 1410.11. So it came within two ticks of hitting that zone and then sold off. So we've been seeing a lot of that here lately, where we'll get within a couple ticks and it just can't quite make it.
Yeah.
Can't quite.
I noticed something that that you say your ranges are just being missed, and you're using a Globex, and I'm using the day session, and my numbers are like barely being tagged in, and so I guess that's a so there's a difference when you're using Globex versus day session. I think it's, I mean, yeah, they were at your level pre-open, and then after stocks open, they stopped at my level. So I don't know, kind of odd. It was kind of like that on the bottom too. I think you might have had a level below, and mine was I don't know, somewhere in there. But
yeah, I'm gonna pull my chart up here in just one second. There we go. Okay. Yeah, here's where it was pre-market. Right here. 1409.5, so we got within two ticks.
And then,
yesterday morning, we had a zone down at 94, and the low was... What was the low right there?
I snailed.
Yeah, that came within one tick.
The
low was 94.25. Yeah, so came within a tick there. And then missed it by two ticks up here, but we're coming down pretty hard. And when we left the live trading room this morning, I told the guys to watch this area, watch this pullback. Number one, this big wick sticking up here, which again, that was pre-market, but we do watch that. And then price got below the MA1, and then we came down and we pulled right back into the pocket here. Weekly trading zone at 0506, where the market has spent kind of the bulk of its day in and around that area.
Couldn't say.
And so as we pulled back into the, you know, the red MA1 overhead and coming down, I told him, leaving the live trading room, I go, watch that for chance of it being some pretty good resistance. And so far, it has. And it looks like we could go down to challenge the low of the day, which is 1402. And then if 1402 breaks, then our next stop on the way down is 1399, 1400.
Okay. Yes, our numbers are like a point or two apart, and so that's kind of like what I mean. You got your number on Globex, and then once stocks open, I think the early high was at 1407.75, which was at our resistance area. So that's what's kind of interesting, I think.
Ed, an answer to your question, what is the MA1? The MA1, the CFMA1, that's the backbone of our indicator set. And as you can, now this is on an hourly time frame, but we use this on all time frames. When price gets on the back side of the MA1, we anticipate higher prices. And as you can see, it turns blue and it walks it right up to the top. And then once price gets below the CFMA1 and you see it turning red here, price pulls back into the MA1 and then we begin to drop here. Okay, once we're below it, now we anticipate lower prices. Just as over here, once we got below it, we anticipated lower prices until when? Until we get back above it. Once we're above it, we anticipate higher prices until when? Until we get back below it. So all of our other indicators tend to work hand in hand with that based upon whatever time frame you're in. So I use it on an hourly to then come over and find my setup on the smaller time frame, which is the 10K. Right here, that's the same indicator. It gave us a signal right here to be long. Okay. Additionally, here. And now what will happen is it will give us one right here to be short on a pullback to 1404.75. So come hang out in the live trading room and I'll show you a little more about how that works. Now, Mike, you've got a trading camp coming up. Is that not correct?
That's correct, Dwayne. Thanks. September the 16th is when we kick it off. Sunday through Thursday, and then we get. So yeah, that's not too far down the road. but yeah, thanks for mentioning it, Dwayne. We'll be going through everything that I've done over the years and give out some neat stuff for swing trades and go through our day trade setups and all that stuff. So hopefully we'll have another good group and have a good three or four days. So
well, good. Is the information on that on your website?
Yeah. Let's see, you can go. Let me give you a link here, Dwayne. See if I can find it. Yeah. Not sure where to put it, but anyway, it's on. If this doesn't come through, Dwayne, then try the homepage. Go to the homepage, and you can click on products. It'll take you to the, and then check on the campsite. Not sure if you caught that link or not.
Yep, I got it.
Okay.
I got it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, it's in the chat room. All right. Well, let's go talk to our friend David Williams, patiently waiting over there at pagetrader.com. Robin is out in Chi-Town today, hanging out with the really important folks there on what's the name of that road? What's the Chicago's equivalent of Wall Street? What is it, Bert? What do you guys call that road?
The South Street.
South Street.
What's the street you're on?
Wacker and Monroe.
Wacker. I always thought Wacker was like the Chicago's answer to Wall Street. All right. Well, hang on, Bert. Don't run away. We're gonna bring David on here.
Hey, Mike.
Don't go away, guys. We'll be right back.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310, and we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
Thank you. Good morning, Dwayne.
Good morning, David. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, and thank you. Good morning, both Mike Reed, and good morning, Michael Bork, and good morning, Bert, and good morning to everyone.
Hello, David.
How are you, Michael?
How are you? I'm good. Thank you.
I'm doing well. Thank you. I'm watching the market and just dreaming about, you know, being on a boat on a shady river somewhere where it's not quite so hot.
Yeah.
It's really hot out here. So, how are you doing?
A lot. Well, we lost our heat wave, thank goodness.
Oh, that's
the,
nice.
This summer, man, I tell you, electric bills, almost went to double from what it
did
was
they really?
A year ago. Just about this summer, 1 month. For 2 months, I had huge jumps.
Well, you know, sometimes I want to say something about that because I have a little bit more knowledge about electric bills now. And, you know, I don't know if I've ever mentioned on the program I drive an electric car.
No, I don't think you've
heard that.
But because of that, I've learned a little bit more about kilowatt hours and some of the other terminology that works around electricity. And one of the things that I've found also because, you know, when you have a home, you look at your electric bill and you realize that, you know, these various things in your home take electricity. One thing that I've seen in a number of different homes is that if your air conditioning unit is older, inefficient, it will chew up a whole bunch of power. And it will do it in the summertime where it has to run a whole lot longer than it would otherwise. Just as a standard thing now, if you're trying to save money, this is for everybody, of course, but this is what I've learned. You should not have an air conditioner that has a SEER rating, S-E-E-R, rating of less than 14. If you have an older home that's 20 years old, your SEER rating on your air conditioner might be as low as 3 to 5. And on top of that, it has to run a whole lot more to get your house cool, and that'll chew up a big chunk of your electric bill. So that's one thing. I've noticed it because I have changed my air conditioner out and years ago, but I really noticed a dramatic change in the power bill. My power bill went here in the summer from about $235 down to about $130 a month. And the majority of that was changing the air conditioner out. Also, leaving equipment on, you guys know that, stereo system, plugged-in appliances, they all chew up power, a ceiling fan running, even though that's a pretty efficient thing. All that stuff adds up. And at the end of the month, over 30 days, it can add up to a nice little chunk. Pool equipment, tell your pool guy you want your pool equipment only to turn on, you know, half the time that it does, because that's a big old electric motor that's definitely drawing a lot of power. You can definitely save on your electric bill. But those are big ones that I've found that have made a difference. And some of the newer homes that are being built have a very, very nice feature. Another thing, if you really want to save electricity, I know this is just something, but it just strikes a chord in me. The new glass that they're putting in new homes is not only double-paned, but it's called e-glass. It has a gas in between those double panes. And if you put your hand out in the hot sun on a glass window on the outside, it's very, very hot. It can actually burn you and raise a blister. It can get so hot. With e-glass, it can be that hot on that side, and you go into the living room and touch that glass, and you can barely feel some warmth, just the tiniest amount. Like 98% of that heat is not there. That means that you're not radiating all that heat into your home. That's an amazing thing. That means you don't have to air condition that heat away. So the new homes have some really nice energy efficiency features. If a person really wanted to, they could change their windows out. It wouldn't be cheap to e-glass on all your stuff. But I'm just saying, I've seen all this, and so your power bill probably went up because maybe your air conditioning and some other things are not as efficient as they could be.
Yeah. I almost went geothermal, but
did you really?
It was still kind of early. Yeah, my brother did, and he likes it, but I personally didn't think I wanted to take a chance on it at that time. I thought it was a few years before they'd be having it pretty much mastered or whatever. Right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't go geothermal. That sounds like something happens to a person. Yeah, he went geothermal on us.
What does that mean? What does that mean, Mike?
They go down underground into the water, and I have a well out there, and they go down and you can, they'll take the, keeps, the water just below the ground keeps a constant, keep a constant temperature in your house, somehow by running a cooler water in the summertime, and, warmer water in the wintertime. So I don't know exactly how it works. I knew, I've forgotten more than I remember.
But it is out there.
It would take like, it's more expensive, of course, than a regular unit, but over a course of five to seven years, probably in my case less, to pay off the difference, in the amount that it can save you over a lifetime of the, they're supposed to last for 30 years, so,
that's pretty good.
Pretty good deal.
You can do a lot with energy efficiency.
Yeah. His bills are really low, and my brother, he has it, and his bills are really low as far as electric goes, and, you can go to any room, and even the basement, the upstairs, all identical temperature.
That's nice.
There's like no change from the basement to the upstairs.
And is that from geothermal?
Right.
That's great. I had read about that. At my own personal home that I live in, I went with a unusual air conditioner called a Frias. And a Frias is a air conditioner that compresses Freon like any air conditioner does. But in order to cool the Freon, you know how when you put your hand above the fan on an air conditioner, you know, you big air conditioner outside and there's a fan and it blows up hot air, that heat that you're feeling is the heat from that it's extracting coming off of the Freon. And so to cool it, in this particular air conditioner, they actually spray a sheet of water on the pipes that have the Freon in it. And so they're using water, which is a very, very efficient medium, to pull heat out of that. And that means the compressor doesn't have to work as hard. So the SEER rating on this particular air conditioner is 22. That's the highest SEER rating that is available right now, but it's so high because they're using a secondary medium to get that heat out of the Freon. And so the compressor doesn't only has to work half as hard and you still get ice cold air. So there's a lot of clever little things that you can do to save on energy. And like we've talked about on this program, you might go out and spend, you know, $5,000 on a vacation or whatever, a piece of art or whatever your thing is, but everybody is very conscious of their fixed bills. You know, what is your fixed expense for living? And it's a really good idea to review those from time to time and see where you can, because things creep up. There's, you know, things creep up after a while, and you start realizing that, you know, we could really save some money. Maybe your air conditioner could be replaced. Maybe you have an old one or whatever, you know. And it actually makes sense sometimes to do that. So, just saying.
Yep.
Also, if you leave your Wild Wild West reruns running for day and night without even not watching them, they're just sitting there running in the background, then that could run up a bill too. But if I was over there, then you could leave them running and it would be for good reason.
24/7,
24/7 is okay with me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if I can get the kids to turn TV off at night and not let it run all night, maybe that's a helper.
Yeah, that's impossible though. You can't do that. You're asking too much of yourself.
Yeah.
To do that.
Yeah, it's just a sleep timer. It's pretty difficult to figure that one out. So.
Yeah. So, Mike, any other viewpoint or insight or anything you've got on the market? Broader view, smaller view, no view is fine. Sometimes I just hate, you know?
Smaller view, yeah. Smaller view, I think we kind of have a breakout today in a way over 1403.
Mm-hmm.
But there's good resistance around today's highs, 1407 to 8, maybe just above it. And that's been rejected two or three times. So but to break down, I think they got to go back down to 99, 98 area, and that would be potential turn. So
Okay. I think that's also just really briefly on my viewpoint on this, on the S&P, it's real quiet and it's summertime. But if we firm up at this 1403, 1402, we will go back by the end of the day or latest early tomorrow and be retesting 1406, 1407. It's no big deal. We're at 1404 right now.
Yeah.
But as long as we maintain today's lows, then later today I would expect them to be back up there. And so a person could buy, if you're following a reflected wave, you could buy a reflected wave bottom. If you're working with Dwayne and Mike's material, you can buy into their indications. If you're using with Mike Reed stuff, I don't know what you do with it because I'm not that on top of it, but utilizing your indication to get in it, you'd be holding for, you could trade up to that to retest the 1406, 1407 level later in the session. Because normally this pullback right here and right now would be important in our work for the market to reverse off of and begin the slow, boring, climb, potentially up to higher prices. Also, just as a real quick thing, the way that the market has done what it's done, if we do close, I would like to see some confirmation today that this breakout is real. They've done nothing really wrong yet. But normally I would expect the market to get up to 1416, 1417, not necessarily today, but on a confirmed breakout here, that would be an initial place for me, of more importance that they would test, and that's very close to the old high of 14, basically 20. So this is very important. I'm sure you believe the same thing. It's very important that what they've done today, and if we close today above, roughly speaking, 1404, we're sitting right at that number now, that's bullish, and I would expect higher prices from here. So I would be bullish with that close. I'm even bullish now because of the, potential for the bottom that we just put in. But on a daily closing basis, I like the idea if they close above 1404, we're going to go higher to 1416 and or higher. That's my outlook. That's what I believe is going to happen. And when does the Wild Wild West movie start? Not the movie. I don't want to confuse people, Mike. It's not the movie.
No.
It's the series.
You betcha.
We know the difference. The movie was fun. But it ain't the Wild Wild West.
No.
You know that.
No. I know that, yeah.
I just want people to know that, we all trade in the markets, whatever. But Wild Wild West, now that's something we can talk about for hours. Remember that one scene when he did this and he did that? No.
Yeah.
I don't know why that means so much to me. It's silly. It's almost like a disorder.
Well.
But you have the same disease, so I feel comfortable around you.
I have that one, yeah.
All right, well.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's basically it. That's my look on the S&P, and I got yours. I appreciate that. And good luck on your training over the weekend here. Did you say this weekend, or was it next week?
The 16th of September, yeah.
Oh, the 16th of September, okay.
Yeah,
gotcha.
We're just a few weeks away yet. So.
Well, you better start getting ready for it, Mike, because that stuff comes up real quick.
It's
like, oh man, I got time. Yeah, we got time. Don't worry. What day is it? September 15th.
OMG.
Exactly. So you best get your stuff ready. I know you do. I'm just poking at you.
Yeah.
So,
Dwayne,
all right.
Guys, thanks for having me on, Dwayne. Appreciate
Mike,
it.
Always
nice to talk
a pleasure.
With you, Mike.
Good to hear from you, man.
You too, David.
I'll talk with you soon. We'll do Wild Wild West.
Okay, thanks again. Hi, Bert. Bye, Bert.
We'll see you later in the
week. See you guys.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
All right. Well, he's just nothing but fun.
He's a good guy.
All right. Dwayne, what has happened on the overnight with regard to the world? Anything big and important that I might have missed?
Helen Gurley Brown passed away yesterday.
I saw that. I did see that.
And beyond that, the Olympic guys, man, we got a lot of gold medals, but those guys get swag like nobody's business.
Sure they do.
I mean, I had no idea. I read the list this morning of the stuff they got. Why does that guy keep calling me? Ringing my phone off the hook. I'm just talking out loud.
Okay, well, you're very popular. I mean, people want to know what you're thinking and what you're doing.
This guy's like repeatedly just bang, bang, bang. All right, anyway. Now I can't remember.
Oh, you were just saying that...
No, I remember what I was talking about. I was just trying to find the article that had sort of a short list of... Well, we'll talk about something else, and then I'll come across.
Okay, yeah, it'll come back. You'll get it.
Well, I got to find it. I mean, because the list, they got watches, they got rings, they get, I think it was 5 duffel bags each filled with stuff from all of the sponsors.
Yeah, well, I mean, you would expect this is a huge worldwide thing. They're gonna get it all, you know, and they deserve it. Wonder if the president wants to make a speech to them.
No,
you know
they deserve
that Olympic medal. You didn't do that. You didn't really do that.
That really
lots
is.
Of people. You think you worked hard for that? Lots of people work hard. You think you're so smart? Lots of people are. There's a lot of smart folks out there. You know, you didn't deserve that. You didn't do that. There was roads and toilets that got you to the Olympic medal. Wonder if he wants to make that speech. Probably does, to be honest with you. But probably won't. Got himself in a little bit of hot water with that last one, didn't he? Get him on a roll.
I'll just cut to the chase, and I'll break down and Google Olympic swag, and it just pops right to the top. And there's the article I was reading earlier, Forbes magazine. That sounds like me. Okay, and page loading. All right, Olympic swag bags and freebies, why every U.S. athlete came home a winner. American athletes are very successful at the London 2012 Olympic Games, bringing home 46 gold medals. But what most viewers did not realize was that every single one of the 529 athletes representing Team USA brought home gold, along with thousands of dollars worth of other freebies. So what exactly did our athletes walk away with? Well, they got $600 gold rings. They got a Swiss watch from Omega, the official timekeeper of the games, worth several thousand dollars. And beyond that, they received 5 duffel bags each, containing about 100 items from sponsors like Ralph Lauren, Nike, Oakley, Procter & Gamble, with a total of nearly 100,000 free items dispensed to Team USA. Clearly the most valuable swag was the Omega watch and the rings, which were sized for each athlete on site and in many cases customized with engraving or diamonds, or upgraded in Olympic jewelry parlance. Most surprisingly, or not surprisingly, the entire men's basketball team opted for upgrades to their rings. O.C. Tanner is the designer and donor of the 14-karat gold commemorative rings for the U.S. Olympic team. They presented each U.S. athlete with lots of gold bling. Custom tailors were on hand to make sure all the clothes fit properly, and all the rings and sunglasses were fitted individually on site. And it goes on. Now, for any of you guys that have ever been to a convention, you know what a swag bag is. You know, it's a little plastic bag that has like some notepads and some pens in it and maybe a key fob and, you know, a couple brochures. It's just some stuff so that when you go away, you might remember the company's name. This is an outstanding swag bag. The rings alone donated to the U.S. had a value of $317,000. So, anyway, the Olympics are over. It's a done deal now. folks in London a little disappointed. The people coming to visit did not spend the kind of money that it was hoped. You know, these cities, they vie for the opportunity to be the Olympic city. And the next Olympics potentially is going to be a disaster, because it's going to be in a country that is they don't really have the infrastructure. Do you know where the next Olympic Games are, David? Brazil. Going to Brazil. And so, is Brazil a world-class city? Yes and no. I mean, our country. Brazil's a country. But that's where the next Olympic Games are going to be held. And there's a lot of contention about whether there's, you know, they can have adequate security, not even to mention enough toilets for people to go to the bathroom. So, yeah, it's going to be in Rio. And they got, you know, 4 years to get ready. And they say it's going to take, they're going to have to work around the clock to get that city ready to handle the crowd. So, that is if the economy's in better shape. Right now in Brazil, if you want to buy a cheap Grand Cherokee, which sells for $28,000 here in the United States, by the time you're done with government taxes there, that same Jeep Cherokee costs you $80,000. Amazing. All right, David, so that's it. That's what's happening. That's what's going on. That's what you missed while you were asleep, and I was up scouring the news. So, back to you, caller. You know, when you're talking, I actually stick around. I may not pay attention some of the time, but I actually hang around while you're talking.
Well, Dwayne, there have been times where I'll stop and I'll say something, and you're just as dead as a doornail, just wondering if you're anywhere near there. No, I was right here.
But
I accidentally turned my mic off without realizing it, so that was just I heard everything you said about Brazil, the $80,000 Jeep and all that stuff.
Okay.
So,
all right.
Right with you there.
Okay,
today, the president made a comment about shared prosperity. And for those of you who listen to the program, you know what that, you know, what the, let me get out the Obama to English dictionary. And that means spread the wealth, and that means redistribute wealth. He believes in sharing and prosperity. And when, you know, like I said yesterday, our country is filled with the most giving people on the planet. Not everybody does it. But we really are. We're the most giving country on the planet. But he has a vision, and that vision is that if you work hard and get ahead, it's not shared prosperity. It's compelled sharing of the prosperity that he wants. It's not that you're sharing it out of your own desire to do so. Shared prosperity means I'm coming to take what you earned, and I'm going to give it to these people over here who didn't earn it. That's what Obama speak for shared prosperity means. He said that, and again, there's little cracks in his armor. He lets it out. He lets people know he really is. It really is Joe the plumber all over again. Spread the wealth around. You know, is there anything wrong with working hard for yourself? Is there anything wrong with taking care of your family, brightening the corner where you are, and making sure that the people that you were entrusted to take care of are well taken care of? Is there anything wrong with that? Is there anything wrong with having a business? Or if by having a business, are you a predator in this country or under the view of this administration? Are you a predator to other people? Do you owe more than you pay in taxes? Should you, you know, is it a commune? Is America a commune? I mean, where does this guy want to take this? And I have your answer. You'll find out in about 3 months. Because should he win, you'll see all you ever need to know about Barack Obama. Because he won't have any reason to hide it anymore. So, and I do want to say that I'm not predicting this, but I believe that the economy at some point is going to pick itself up in spite of Mr. Obama, not because of him. We've already had the because of him for 4 years, and we haven't done much. But, and like I've said before, you know, a gambler who loses lots and lots of money and comes home and tells his wife, well, I made $300 today, that's not something to brag about because you have a loss column that's a lot bigger. Well, that's where we are in America right now. We have a very big loss column, and we've slowly, over the last 4 years, picked up and had a few jobs picked up. Not many. We have a whole lot more loss than we have picked up. But I do think, in spite of him, we have a shot of turning this thing around. What we won't have a shot of is turning it around is if we don't stop the spending. And as I said the other day, and I just want to mention this, and take a look. Just look around in your life and the people that you know. Doesn't matter whether you're left or right, because I have plenty of good friends that are Democrats. They're just not far left. I also don't particularly like the extremes on either end, far, 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 far right, far, 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 far left. But I just want you to notice that people don't recognize that their own ideology is very different than how they live their own lives. And I want you to take a look around and see the contradiction between what people say that they're for, what they espouse and argue with you with, what their world philosophy, their country philosophy, their outlook on this, and how they actually live their life. See that contradiction. The people who, you know, want us to go spend another $4 trillion after we're $16 trillion in debt, when they go home, and like I said the other day, when their son or daughter has maybe a credit card or has run up their own debt or something, they don't go tell them to go to the bank and borrow more money. They do the exact opposite. Have you ever known anybody that's in bankruptcy? Ever see what happens to people that are in bankruptcy? The court comes in, and the court, very un-Obama-like, tells you this. You can only spend this much money right here. This is all you can spend. This amount. Show me what your bare expenses are right here. List them out for me. This is the judge. That's good. Write them down for me there. Okay, well, I'm going to get rid of a little of this. I'm going to get rid of this. This is all you can spend. And all the rest of your money, you know where that goes? It goes to paying off your debt. That's why they call it bankruptcy. Now, what the court is doing is the right thing. You owe the money. You can't pay it off all at once. So you get yourself into a position where you can make these arrangements, creditors work with you, and you pay it off. That's very, very different than what the philosophy of this government is. Even though the country's filled with courts that tell people to do that, the fact is that our country is not run that way right now. Our country is just as if the man comes home, sees his 25-year-old son, you know, with a huge debt on his credit card and says, son, let's go to the bank and get you a line of credit for another $25,000, and we'll take care of this. That's what the country is doing right now. And that's not going to work. It hasn't worked. And if it's left to its own resources, it'll crash the country. And if it doesn't crash the country, your son, your daughter, people that you care for are going to have less of a good American life than we did, because they're going to be having to spend more, and they're going to have to pay their, you know, fair share to pay off all of the debt that these people are accumulating right in front of us. They're just spending it right in front of all of us. So if you do want to vote for Barack Obama, I have to say you're not voting responsibly, because responsible people take care of their debts. Responsible countries take care of their debts. We can grin and bear it and cut some programs and cut where we have to take care of debts. But everybody's such a little crybaby. Little tiny thing has to get cut, and boy, 17 pressure groups show up to scream why that can't happen. And then we just keep spending and spending. But you're not very responsible, if I may say so, if you want to vote for another 4 years of the irresponsibility that we've seen up till now. It's irresponsible by any standard, by your own standard, if you're a responsible parent. What the government is doing is irresponsible. You wouldn't act that way in your own family, but somehow, if you're on the left, you just think it's grand that our government acts that way and continues to act that way because of ideology, because of what you think, you know, whatever you believe in this vision. Well, how's this for a vision? Get to work and pay your debts. How's that? That's how America got here, by the way. It didn't get here handing it out to people. Every single person in America tried to reach their own potential, whatever that was. That's how America got great. You want to stunt the growth of America? Then you give people unearned benefits. in the form of checks and other benefits and just keep them sitting there. They'll stunt, and then America won't reach its potential. Is that what you want? Is that how you want to see America, is just to have a bunch of people, half of it not reaching their potential? We didn't get here that way. We got here from everybody trying to reach their potential. And when somebody doesn't reach the highest potential that someone else did, that's wonderful for that person. He reached his highest potential. We don't turn and blame the other person who reached higher for whatever reason. We don't blame him and charge him for that. We applaud it the same way that we applaud whatever potential's reached. Everybody needs to work. Everybody needs to reach their potential. Everybody needs to pay their debts. Any other program is irresponsible. And this government is downright, sickeningly irresponsible. And if that's the kind of government you want, if that's the kind of America you want, great. Good for you. But I don't want to live in your America. I want to live in America where people are responsible for themselves, for their loved ones, and they understand that if they incur a debt, they have to pay it back. And they don't just keep borrowing and borrowing and borrowing to keep doing that over and over and over again until the whole system just crashes. And that's where we're headed under this administration. Whatever you believe, whatever people you think should have the money or the people that you think should have the benefits, in the end, the whole system's going to crash. And then where's all your love and good feeling going to go? What happens? All your good feelings for mankind, all the things you want to help. You're not going to be able to do any of that if the whole system crashes. You're going to be in someone else's cage if the whole system crashes. That's what's going to happen. Someone's going to have you in a cage, and you're going to be working for him, and that's going to be some other dictator or something like that. So somebody better wake up and understand that you cannot keep doing what this government's doing. Irresponsibility multiplied by 1,000 isn't a good thing, and then multiplying that by another 1,000 is a worse thing, and we keep doing it and doing it. So, you know, I hope you think about that and take a look at how people on the far left actually live their life. And you'll find that it's quite different than what their ideology is, because they're not going home and telling their kids to go to banks and borrow more money. They're doing the same thing that Republicans do. Billy, you get this much allowance, you spend more than that, and that's all you get. If you had a credit card and you went into debt, I'm not giving you any more money. You have to do this, you have to mow the lawn, you have to do that. But we're too soft now. We're getting too soft in America. And over time, it's getting softer and softer until half the whole country is going to be receiving some kind of a check from this government. And that stunts the country's growth. It stunts individuals' growth. And those people are not going to be able to reach their potential. America becomes a less good place to live in. The economy crashes, whatever. All the bad things happen. Everyone has to participate. Everyone has to reach their potential. Mr. President, stop giving unearned benefits to people. People need to work. They need to be productive. They want to be productive. It feels good to be productive. And for God's sakes, get government out of the businessman's life so he can do what he does best. Stop regulating things and thinking that you are the master of all this. You know, we all did have teachers. You know, one thing he said was is true. Obviously, we all had teachers and mentors and people who got us excited. I had one in my life by the name of Vernon Howard. And he made a huge, huge, huge difference in my life. And I owe him, you know, thank you, Mr. Howard. I owe him untold amounts of gratitude. So, yes, we do have that. But that's not really what he was saying. He threw that in there. What he's really saying is he was really expressing his disgust for successful people. But he invites those people to his parties. The little man, the little guy that he says he's fighting for. And by the way, the little guy that he's not going to raise the taxes on, let's say you're a landlord. Let's say you own an office complex and, you know, people are renting from you. And he's telling the little people, you know, quote unquote, Leona Helmsley's little people, the middle class. He's telling them, listen, I'm not going to raise taxes on you. See the ugly people over there? We're going to raise taxes on them, the rich. Okay, so he raises the taxes on the rich, and he goes to them and he raises it in different ways. And one of those ways is he raises it by charging them more money because they're renting an office building. He raises the tax on that. Well, they're going to just turn around. There is a thing called trickle-down economics, and here it is. You raise it on them, they're going to turn around and charge the people that are renting from them. And there's your middle-class tax hike. There it is. So if you're going to tax the rich, they're going to turn around, and it is going to trickle down, and the products and services they sell, they're going to charge more for, and you're going to pay it. you and me, Mr. Middle Class. So there's no such thing. It's a boomerang. It's a bunch of nonsense. If you charge them more, the trickle-down is that you're going to get charged more. So it doesn't make sense to charge anybody more now. It makes sense to cut back on spending now and open opportunities and incentives for people and stop wasting money on your stupid green initiative. Because 9/10 of those, your running mate got 7 out of 10 of his picks correct in Bain Capital. You're about 1 out of 9, and the 1 out of 9 that was GM, it turns out today, we're going to lose about $25 billion on that as well. So, you know, you're complaining about the guy that's running against you, but you don't know exactly how to do what he did. And I don't think he would have wasted about $2 billion on green energy companies that seem to miraculously disappear about 2 or 3 weeks after you leave their plant, after praising how many jobs they're going to have. Go check his record out on that. Ain't too pretty. So thanks for listening. Anyway, let's get on to the markets.
Okay,
so with regard to today's S&P, so we're at kind of a point here where, as I mentioned before, if we get the market to hold today's low, the 1402 level, I don't want to see any hourly closes below 1401, then we have a real possibility of higher prices later in the session and early tomorrow. So they're testing that whole business right now. So we'll see how that cooks a little later. Today's, the low we just made now is 1402.25. So, and we just finished the hour. So we closed the hour at 1403. So we're sitting kind of pretty right here. We'll see if they can firm this up a little bit here. Anything else you want to bring up on the S&P, Dwayne? I know you've talked about it already, but any other point you want to make?
No. That area we talked about for resistance right there has held so far. And if we continue down, we look for 99/1400. That's about it.
Okay. Fair enough. Okay, let's take a look around here. Let's see a few of these other... Okay, so the gold market. We've talked about this. Gold has reversed. We originally talked about, let's go back just a little bit, originally talked about the market back, this is a ways back now, but forgive me on this. We talked about the market making a top on July 27th. It did. This was a reflected wave top. And then selling off to 1612, and then aggressive could hold for 1586. They got down to 1586. They reversed off that, and we mentioned that the price of 1586 would normally be due the following week. That's this week. But they did it 1 week early, and the way that we would know if they really were going to go higher here is by breaking out above 1621, 1622. They tried to yesterday. They actually closed at 1623.10. It just wasn't enough. It was a little tricky, and then they slammed them back down today. This is a very common theme with markets, and we're going to talk about some of these things. There's an interview coming up this week on Thursday with the fellow that wrote The Random Walk Down Wall Street, and we're going to, you know, have a very cheerful conversation with him about the nature of markets, the nature of how all this works, and if perhaps maybe it is random and maybe it isn't. We're going to spend a little time with him. That should be interesting. That's about 6-8 months in the making, so you might want to make sure you come to that. And Dwayne, what's the time on that again?
11 a.m. Eastern.
Okay. 11 a.m. Eastern time. So that's when that's happening. That's on Thursday. Okay, so with regard to this, if this week, if we were, today's low was already 1591, if we were to test the 1586 level during this week again, that would be important, and then we'll talk about it at that time. We've actually gone down to 91 already, so they're attempting it. This is the 1 week late now for that price. Why is all this important? Is because we may be able to get a powerful reversal out of that for an advance. But as it stands right now, we're going to leave it alone and see what they do a little bit later in the week. That's for gold. That's the December gold contract. Facebook, I read something the other day where they listed all of the companies that you would have to burn all of their capital to replicate how much investor money has gone away on the Facebook IPO, which is like $50 billion. So, you know, they just listed this whole list of companies, you know, this company, that company, this company, that company, and it all adds up to $50 billion. It's a pretty big number. Honestly, that's a huge amount of money that has been lost, I suppose, in the market. It's pretty much vaporized in the form of stock value that is now gone because of where Facebook is trading right now at $20.83. So a lot of people participated in this, and Dwayne has talked about the Thursday that's coming up here where, don't you say, Dwayne, on Thursday we have the 2.3 billion shares or something that comes out?
Well, it's 2 billion over the next 4 months, but what's actually coming into the market...
Oh, that's right, yeah, sorry.
What's actually coming into the market on Thursday is... I've got the numbers here. August the 15th, 268 million shares, which is 10% of all outstanding shares. Those will no longer be locked up. They will become free trading. And I've seen a number of talking heads and a number of articles that have attempted to put a positive spin on this fact, as if, you know, let's throw a party because the lockup period is over, the lockup release. Injecting an, today, so far, in Facebook, 24 million shares have exchanged hands. The average volume, average daily volume, is 28 million. Based on today's current price at $20 and change, it has a market cap of $44 billion. The market cap, when it went public at $38, was over $100 billion. So that tells you how much market cap has been lost, David, over $60 billion.
Yeah, no, it's big. It's big. It's an amazing amount.
And so 24 million shares have traded today. The average daily volume is 28 million shares. And so there's no shortage of shares. Anybody that wants to buy shares of Facebook, they don't need to wait until Thursday when another 268 million shares are injected into the market, unless they want to buy their shares cheaper, then they should be very excited about what's going to happen on Thursday, because today's price is $20.84, and I may be on a 10-minute time delay with that price. But whatever price we close at today, trust me, you will be able to buy shares cheaper than that price on Thursday. And now that's my opinion, and you should seek a licensed financial advisor before taking action, but that is my belief.
I think they should seek professional counseling before taking action. Just joking. Okay.
Sending all those shares into the market. I mean, you just think about it. Supply and just think of the simple supply and demand equation. Mm-hmm. And suddenly, there's going to be, you know, another 284 million shares out there to be bought and sold. Will everyone who's locked up rush to sell their shares? No, I don't think so. I think some people will hold on to it because they have a longer-term investment horizon, or they think it'll come back. But there's a percentage of those people, especially the younger people who didn't actually pay for the shares, who got them as part of, you know, the deal of being an employee, people who've never had any sizable chunk of change before, they are going to rush out and sell at least some of their shares. Now, Facebook's been working very hard to line up institutions who will absorb some of this selling. And what kind of deals have been struck, you know, behind closed doors, we don't know. We have not been made privy to that. And we may at some point find out more details. And there may be some institutions willing to sit on the bid and soak up some of these shares. But if I wanted to buy Facebook stock, I would absolutely wait until Thursday to see if I couldn't maybe get it at least a couple dollars cheaper.
I think that's good advice, Dwayne. Okay, so let's move on. We'll go to the Treasury bond market. We're testing this week's low right now in the Treasury bond market. We've had a decent decline, nothing too bad, but the market is testing some important lows. I've mentioned many times about utilizing the low interest rates to take advantage of them in whatever way you can, whether it's the refinance of the house, the car loan, whatever it is, because this is a blue moon. It's not going to last forever, no matter what the government might tell you, as far as I'm concerned. I'm not a financial advisor, but I do play one on the radio. But I'm really not advising you. And you do have to look and ask your own people about your particular condition, financial condition, and what you can do with low interest rates and what would be a wise idea. But in general, I really like the idea of taking advantage of it in some way, shape, or form. I mean, it's a great bragging right to say I got a, it's not just a bragging right. It's a good thing to have financially if you can get a 3.5, 3.7, 30-year loan. That's the cheapest money you're going to see for a long, long time, I think. Okay, so the euro, nothing really to add to the euro. Same deal that we've talked about, the euro putting in the monthly bottom. Very quiet in the euro here. So in many markets, this is the summertime. This is why it slows down. It's not that we're not finding anything. And it's really there. They're just very slow markets. The crude oil market, we had the forecast for the August 7th reflected wave top. We've gone sideways to lower for several days. Nothing really to add to that either. Very, very quiet. Gasoline prices have gone up some across the state here. That's kind of goes without saying. Let's see if there's anything else that we can find that is of interest. Not a whole lot to add. Tesla stock is down a little bit today. They've moved back and forth. The company, this is the electric car company, was originally planning on delivering 5,000 of their Model S sedans, and then they said that for a little while they're just going to build one a day to make absolutely certain that the quality control is there. And Wall Street wasn't crazy about that. But obviously Wall Street wouldn't be crazy had their quality control been bad and they delivered 80 cars a day. And, if the quality control was bad, then Wall Street wouldn't like that. I think this is the wiser of the two courses to make absolutely sure that everyone who gets one is very happy with it and then slowly ramp up. I can't see anything wrong with what they're doing. Yes, it slows the money flow down, but is money everything? I mean, shouldn't we be concerned about the long-term prosperity of the company, et cetera? And make sure that the product is what it should be. So, but the Wall Street didn't like that, and they took them down much further than I thought they would. They bounced off that level now, so that's nice. So let's see. Trying to think if there's anything else of real importance for today. Most markets are pretty quiet.
There's a question today. If you have anything on soybeans. And let's see, there's a question if you had anything on corn, anything on soybeans, and anything on your reflected wave bottom due on natural gas.
Let's take a look. Let me get over to those pages here. Just give me a second here. We don't look at these pages that often, so let me get in there and take a look. With regard to natural gas, let's start with that. Let me get over there and see what we have going. Okay, so we had a bottom, I believe, that was due on natural gas. The on-time day was actually today. I think we mentioned this yesterday, August 14th. Now, natural gas, the symbol is different for every. It's funny, they don't have standardized commodity symbols, but for us it's NGEU2, but Dwayne, it's probably very different on your system or somewhat different. Either way, we had talked yesterday about natural gas having a bottom due on August 14th. This is actually part of a volatility, small volatility cycle here. The real bottom, the actual bottom, came yesterday, one day early, on August 13th. We mentioned that they needed to stay above the 27 and change level, which they did. And today they've rallied actually quite nicely. They're up almost a full dollar, which is a good move in natural gas. So there should be a multi-day advance off of this. you know, interestingly, in our reflected wave course, and I don't like to mix, you know, the commentary on markets with the course too much, but I just want to say, in our course, one of the things that we teach is how to know how long to hold your initial position for off of a, as an example, a turn like this. And the market is currently, for those of you who obviously, this is only for people who've been to the course, you would know if you take a look at the natural gas chart and follow that, the principle that's taught there, that we're right now at a spot where you would be saying, this is the initial spot that the market should have gone to off of the daily bottom, right where we are right now. So this would be a initial spot to book something. We do expect, because it is a daily bottom, I expect higher prices. But there's a possibility of the reaction off of this level, and therefore this is a very good place to book some initial gains. So that's for natural gas. Nothing really more to add to it except that there would normally be a multi-day reaction off of this bottom. The August 14th bottom, and again, it came one day early, and I do want to say that it's a little trickier to trade one day early turning points, to trade them, not to call them. Calling them is easy, but trading them is a little more tricky because you're not 100% sure or sure enough, in some cases, that they're not going to actually put the bottom in on the on-time day. So you have to look to other types of signals, which we talk about, to help you confirm that you can be long and assume that the one day early is how they did it. Most of my trading with reflected wave, some of it is on one unit early. There's no question. I do a bit of that, especially when the market's testing an important price level, some critical, something really big. But a lot of times I just won't bother with the one day early and take only the on-time day or the one day late. And we talked about the value of the one day late, but the on-time can be very, very good for this kind of thing, if you just want to wait for the higher probability and maybe a little bit less work in putting the trade together. Okay, so we'll move on from natural gas. See if there's anything else in that group. We did talk about, or we haven't talked about soybeans yet. Let's take a quick look at the soybean market. We had called for a top on soybeans on August 13th, and you can see that that ties in with the natural gas bottom. The top for soybeans came one trading day early on August 10th, that was Friday. This is a good example of a one day early, but they did have a critical price that they were testing, and they failed at that price. That was up at 1663. Anyway, so they've had a good, this is the second day from that sell-off right now. Nothing too big to add to this, except that I think I mentioned earlier, I would be interested in trading this starting tomorrow into August 16th. As the next 2 days that I would be interested in initiating a position in this market. So tomorrow we'll have something potential for you on soybeans, on actually doing something. But for the most part, other than the move on natural gas, very, very quiet. And this could be a good day to, you know, how you have all the little jars with money in it and stuff. You put your change in there and all that stuff. You could gather all that up and bring it to the bank and might add up to a nice little chunk. Never know, because it's real quiet in the markets. That might be a better trade right there. Go collect your change, bring it to the bank. There's a nice little trade. Do they charge for that when you put it in the little machines, or is that no?
Yeah,
they
no,
probably
they,
do.
They charge. They got to pay for the machine. Yep.
Yeah.
It's a percentage. I'm not sure how much.
I just want to relay an experience that I just had. I have a bank out. We have a bank in Las Vegas called Nevada State Bank. They're a good bank. There's nothing really wrong with them, but somehow in a bill-paying account, I had gotten upside down. It sometimes happens. You think you have more money in there, or you write a check, or a check comes through, and it went upside down by $19. And so as a courtesy, the bank extends you the $19. In a sense, they give you a loan for $19, mm-hmm. so that the $19 check doesn't bounce. It actually was for a gym membership, and they had put it through. It wasn't a credit card. A lot of times that's on your credit card. This was through a bank account. And so the $19 got deducted, and they got paid, which is good. And you say, well, that's really nice. That's a great little feature. And then they send out to you within 5 days of that, they send you a little notice saying, you know, we basically loaned you $19 so that you could pay this out. Please come in as soon as possible to pay the $19 back. And if you're like anybody else, normal person, you don't come in because you're busy and you got other things to do than pay the bank the 19. You'll pay it, but you don't have the time right now, and it's you physically have to go into the bank and whatnot. So fair enough. So that happened to me, and I like to get things done. I like to take care of these things, but I let it go, and I didn't get over there, one thing after another. So finally I got over there, and the lady said, yeah, so it's, let's see, that'll be $216, Mr. Williams. I said, oh, you must have got the wrong account, because I was upside down by 19. She said, no, I got the right account. It's 216. I said, how'd it get to 216? Did another check come through? She said, no, just the one. She says, we charge $8 a day past the 5 days. Mm. So I said, so let me make sure that I'm getting this right. You extended me the courtesy of loaning me $19. It's less than 1 month later, and you're charging me more than 10 times that amount for that courtesy. Is that correct? She said, yes, that's what it is. It's $8 a day. So just remember that. They actually did, they were very nice about it. I've been a customer a long time. They did completely wipe it off. I didn't have to pay that. But I just want you to know, that's a great example of a fee that a bank can charge you legally that outstrips even, the price that mob people would be charging you to loan you money. They're certainly not going to loan you $100 today, and in 30 days, you're going to owe 10 times that amount. And that's what the bank had done. 10 times 19 is $190. I was up at like 216. And it hadn't even been a month. I think those fees are a little high. And listen, so if the bank offers you that, if they say to you when you're signing up for your account, they say, we can offer you this service as a courtesy. You know, if your check, if you happen to be upside down, we'll cover it. And then your question, you say, well, that's wonderful. Thank you. What do you charge me if it runs past 5 days? Just make sure you get that question in there, because it could add up to a nice little chunk of change. How you doing? So there you are.
I wonder what sort of an APR that works out to be.
Through the roof.
Yeah, at eight dollars a day.
It's like going to a store and you can't fit in any of these. You finally just pick up the clothes. Do you have this in huge? You don't even name the number. You know, it's like, I don't know what that number would be, but the APR probably is millions of percent. So we all complain, and you've heard about the regulations for the payday loan stores where you go in and everyone's up in arms about how they're abusing the poor and abusing the people who need the money and, you know, and on and on and on. And they charge like, 6%, a month or whatever it is. This is 10 times. This is 1,000% in less than a month from bank fees. I don't know why that's not on TV. Or maybe it is on TV.
Well, people are always complaining about the fees that banks charge and how that, imagine if you had had a couple other checks come in on top of that.
It wouldn't have been pretty. So you just have to be sure that you know when they offer a thing like that. It's very nice. It actually is very nice that the person who I owed money to got paid. I'm deeply appreciated. I want them to get their money, and I don't want to have a problem. And I think it's very fair that the bank gives me the 5 days. They send the letter out. But by the time the letter gets to you, you might have 2 days to get in, whatever. But they still give you a little free time. And in the end, it's my responsibility, and I take it on fully. And, I did what I should do on my end, which is to try to get out of it at the bank, which I did. And they were nice enough to let me out of it. But in the end, it's a pretty pricey thing, especially it's $8 a day, I think, no matter what the dollar figure is. So it actually wouldn't work out to that much if they'd given 200 out. It wouldn't be 10 times that amount. But you just have to just make sure you ask your bank about that. It's a nice feature to have on the rare occasions that you might be in a position to need that, because you don't want people to have to call, hey, because those are bills, your regular every month type of bills. So check with your bank, ask about that. Just a life experience that I had that I hadn't had in a long time, and it was kind of funny in some ways that it was that high of an APR. But I don't think the $8 goes up if it's a higher check. If they would have cleared a check that was $200, it would have been $8 a day times 20 days, and it still would have been a high amount, but it wouldn't have been anywhere near 10 times. So, and there you are. There's my story for the day. And as we're talking, we're starting to firm up on that level where that we mentioned earlier might be buying territory. We actually did buy in our Messenger Pro, and we're still holding. And I think we're going to hold, honestly, we're going to try to hold for the rest of the day because there's not a whole lot happening in the market here. But I'll tell you, if you want to make some money today, I've got a great solution. I mean, really, you can make some money today. Turn off the screen, collect all your change, bring it to the bank, and you're paid. It's a pretty good trade. You pay like $4 at the machine, and you get back 80 because you brought 80 in. All right, I'll
remember,
leave.
Remember, guys, that advice was free. So you did,
that's free.
You didn't have to pay anything for that, so don't get upset.
That's right. That's right.
All right, David.
And there you are. Oh, thank you very much, Dwayne. I'll hopefully you have a little bit something more, but again, I just want to remind people, thank you, Dwayne, very much. And it was nice to have Mike Reed on. And it's the summertime. It's just, this is how markets are in the summertime. They get very slow. Might be a good time to just get other things done and get them out of the way because you ain't going to see a lot of action here. See more action at the change machine at the bank than you will on the markets today. And with that, I'll see you all tomorrow.
All right, buddy. Have a great afternoon.
Thanks very much. You too, Dwayne. See y'all.
I didn't notice what time it was. All I know is that I fell in love with you. And if all my dreams come true, I'll be spending time with you. Every day's a new day in love with you.
All right, guys, that's going to do it for us. I put a link in the chat box for you, and the question box, take you over to a little article called Hip to Be Square. I talked about it last week, and I finally managed to get it written and posted. And don't know if this one will be syndicated or not, but, you know, your tweets, your likes, your Google Pluses, your comments are much appreciated. And just might help. So, by all means, feel free to, even if you have an interest just in the subject matter, okay, not coffee or not even Square, but as a business person, okay, this is real. There, I kind of beat around the bush getting to the point in the article. In fact, I talk about how paying bills or exchanging funds with your cell phone is relatively new here in the U.S. to a degree, but it's no new trick in Africa, in Kenya, in Uganda. In fact, I will show you just real quickly here. Quickly as my browser can load. Which on some days is, just to give you an idea, when you go over and read the article, what you're getting yourself into. As if my browser will ever scroll. There it goes. Oh, and then it gets. Okay. Half of Africa's 1 billion population has a mobile phone. Now, I've talked about this on the show before. I don't know that I spoke about it last week when I said I was going to write this article. But I have talked about how unusual it is to drive down the street in Africa, in Kampala, where I've been, and you see people who you know probably don't have a home or possibly even a hut, but they have a cell phone. And there's all these little colorful shacks on the side of the road where you go and you can buy the phone for, last time I was there, it was, I don't know, $8-$10 American to buy. It was a very big, these weren't smartphones, these weren't iPhones or any of that kind of stuff. This was even before the iPhone days. And $8-$10, you bought a very simple phone, but it did have the capability to text. And in these little colorful shacks all alongside the road, that's where you add minutes to your phone. And in Africa, most of the, or a very large percentage of the population does not have official government identification, nor do they have the minimum dollar amount required to open a bank account. But yet they still need to pay bills, they still need to move money around. In Africa, on a daily basis, people use their mobile phone to pay bills, move cash, buy basic everyday items. In 98, there were fewer than 4 million mobile phones on the African continent. Today, there are more than 500 million. In Uganda alone, 10 million people, or about 30% of the population, owns a mobile phone. Now, in the U.S., that number, of course, is much higher. Probably 70-80% of Americans own a mobile phone. But we're talking about Africa. In Kenya, Safaricom introduced a service 4 years ago called M-Pesa, which allows people to actually store money on their mobile phones. If you want to pay utility bills, send money to a friend, you do it by simply sending a text message. Again, most African, or a large percentage of the African people, don't have the proper identification nor the minimum amount required to open an actual bank account. But they can get a phone, they can load money onto that phone, and via a text message, they can move money around just like they had a bank account. It's estimated that by 2015, global mobile transactions will exceed $1 trillion. According to Carol Rollini, Africa is the Silicon Valley of banking. The future of banking is being defined here. It's going to change the world. Last week, the New York Times said cash moved one small step nearer to its deathbed with the announcement Wednesday that Square, the mobile payment startup company, would form a partnership with Starbucks. So why is it that this company, Square, who most people never heard of, doing a deal with Starbucks? Why is it such a big deal? Well, I get into that. I beat around the bush a lot, give you a lot of background information. Because they were claiming back in 2001, I quote an issue of Time Magazine 2001, where they were talking about the electronic wallet wars, which never happened. The Google wallet, which came out 10 months ago, that thing's failed miserably. Here's where the thing gets really quite interesting. Now, this part's interesting, too. Later this year, they'll turn on the full GPS technology in Starbucks. So when you walk into a Starbucks, your picture and name will pop up on the register if you have the app loaded onto your smartphone. They'll know who you are. And so in order to pay for your beverage, you'll just tell them your name. They'll look at the screen. They'll see your picture. They'll look up at you and see that that's really you. And they'll say, okay. And then that will be deducted from the credit card that you have on file. A little bit like Minority Report. You can click this link and watch the scene from Minority Report where all of the billboards in the mall are calling out to Tom Cruise. They'll know what your last order was. They'll be able to see information as time goes on, you know, what you've ordered in the past, what your regular drink is. But the really big news behind this, and if you're a small businessman, you know what this is like. If you go to get a merchant's account, okay, number one, you have to have a very good FICO number. Now, the people who have credit cards that are coming into your business to spend money, they had to have good credit, in theory, to qualify for their credit card. But you, as the merchant who's going to accept their credit card, you really got to have a nice FICO score, okay? The better your FICO score, the better the deal you'll get in some cases as a merchant. But the process to get approved for a typical merchant account, 1 to 4 weeks, ton of paperwork, okay? And the fees can be exorbitant. I'm sure you've been in some establishments where it says if you use a debit card or a credit card, the minimum purchase is $5. Or it says maybe that if you use a debit or a credit card, you're going to get they're going to tack 50 cents onto your bill. And you as a consumer may have been offended by that and go, well, that's stupid. I'm not going to shop here. Why would I do that? See, many people don't understand that the business person, the business owner, the merchant, is paying a per swipe fee in a lot of cases. Well, anyway, Square does away with all of that. Okay, they take your 1 to 4 week waiting period and all that paperwork and they scrunch it down into one page, online, 60 seconds. And they approve 95% of people who apply. And when you go into a store and they swipe your card or you swipe your card, there's a monthly lease on that. In most cases, you can buy it outright, but they want a crazy sum of money for it, so most merchants lease it. Jack gives you the little Square. Jack Dorsey, CEO of Square, founder. He gives you the little Square. And 60-second approval, free payment processor, 95% approval rate. Here you have one man, Jack, and a merry band of nerds, and they have done what our government has been unable to do for 2 years, and with a couple $1 trillion, which is inject some liquidity into our antiquated and frozen up credit mechanism. And they're just grinding them out. And a lot of banks, major banks, if you have a merchant account with them, your funds are often held for a week. Standard is a couple, 3 days. But with Square, if you process through them, you don't pay any fees. You pay one flat percentage, which is competitive with all the other banks. But you don't pay any of the purse swipes or any of that stuff. And your money's available the next day. If someone comes into your shop today with their credit card and buys a product or a service, whatever it might be, you can go to the bank tomorrow and withdraw your money. With most major banks, you're going to have 2, 3, 4, as much as a week hold on your money before you get it. And if you start processing a lot of business, they're going to freeze up part of your account. They're going to put it in a reserve. If your FICO score is not high, they may require you to put up a very large bond. And so I just got to tell you, Square is, you've not heard the last of Square. Now, there'll be competitors. eBay or PayPal's rolling out their own variation on the theme. But Jack is also co-founder of Twitter, so he's a pretty smart guy. And he got there first, so I think that, yes, Jonathan, Square, I put the link in there. I'll send it to you again. Yes, it's called Square. And what's amazing is it plugs into the headphone jack of your smartphone. So no matter where you go, if someone comes into your shop, you swipe. If you're the type of, if you own the type of a business where you go out to your customer, maybe you have a carpet cleaning business and you go to someone's home, you swipe. With Square, you don't just go mobile, you go global. It's an amazing thing. Square. Coming to a merchant near you. And if you have had some type of business idea and you have wanted to open a business, the barrier to entry here is, I want to say minimal. It's non-existent because you fill out the form online, you submit it, you get a 60-second approval, 95% of people are approved, and you can go to the bank the next day Because online, you're going to tell them what account you want your money deposited in. You sell stuff today. You perform a service today. You go get your cash tomorrow. How much did that cost you? Nothing. You're going to pay the going rate, which is around 3%. So in other words, if you go clean someone's carpets, and that's $100, Square is going to take $3. They're on par with all of the major banks for that fee. But they're not hitting you with all the other hidden fees. They're not running you through the mill to try to get approved. So follow that link, read the article, read about what's been going on in Africa for so long, how they've embraced this technology, and it's just now, you know, coming to America, us, the table-toting, tablet-toting, tech-savvy broadband generation. We're just catching up and catching on. But it will be the thing of the future. And in my opinion, Square got there first. Google Wallet completely flopped. And I think the core nature of how Square operates, it's going to be very appealing, not only to consumers, but super appealing to merchants. If you're a merchant and you've ever done business with PayPal, you know how many hoops you got to jump through over there. It is mind-boggling. And not only do you have to jump through a lot of hoops as a merchant with them, but once a year you have to jump through those hoops all over again. It's incredible. So check them out, squareup.com, or just go to that link that I posted in the room and read the article. If you like it, give me a thumbs up or a Google Plus, or even leave a comment. We get a little online dialogue going. All right. That's it. I'm gone. Thanks so much for tuning in. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace. And I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this, there is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts, and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a 1-week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decisions.